Hello, hello, hello. Good evening. You're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory, Vancouver, UBC. My name is Simon Welton. Coming up right away is the White Noise Show. Though it's a little different tonight. I'm joined in the studio by my good friend Connor, and I should say co-star of the show.
That's very kind, Simon. Hello, everyone.
Oh, your mic's not on. There we go. Now we have another go.
At what?
Saying hello. Just say hello to the good people again.
Hello, good people again.
Thank you very much. Jesus, that was like pulling teeth. All right, so yeah, what we're gonna do tonight is we are gonna have some sketches. We're also gonna have a lot of music. We're gonna have some chat as well. We're gonna really mash it up just
to
keep you.
We're only on 3 hours, aren't we, Simon?
No, we're only on for an hour, unfortunately.
Well, you lied to me. Well, I'm leaving then.
You want to be on?
I thought I was staying here till 2 a.m.
You really? You want to stay here all
I'm
night?
I'm doing anything less.
So you don't have any exams in the morning, apparently. Then
not 2 a.m.
Yeah, you lucky bugger. All right, now okay, yeah. So we're gonna play some music, and then we're gonna have some chat, and we're gonna play some. What we're gonna do with sketches is we're gonna play a couple tonight, sort of our favourites, I guess, from the last 26 episodes. And talk about them and so if you have any questions for us, because we are going to be talking about the show and some general sort of what's been going on last week. It's been a big week with the elections and lots of other fun stuff. So yeah, if you have any questions for us, send them in at whitenoiseubc@gmail.com. Do that right now. Go on, whitenoiseubc@gmail.com. If you just want to insult us in the show, that's fine. I'll read it out. Do it. It'll be a laugh. But first, we're going to play some music. This is The Very Good Slaves with Cheer Up London. So enjoy.
Cheer up, London.
All right, there we go. That was a nice block of music there. We had just played now was Mauno with Burn This. Before that was OK Jazz with Cabbage Head. And just before that was Shopping with We Say You Play, which was, I enjoyed that one. All right, so yeah, I'm joined in the studio by Connor today. How you doing, mate?
Doing well. It's a bit late. This is later than I usually stay up to do radio shows.
It's past your bedtime.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm around the circuit a lot, as you know. But yeah, usually, I mean, because we used to do what?
8 p.m. on a Saturday?
Yeah, I never really went to that, so I actually don't know what the time was. But yeah, no, it's funny, yeah. But it's a pleasure to be here, Simon. It's really cool. It's past my bedtime, but for this, I'll make a marvellous exception.
Well, we're flattered to have you. So
what, me and you both?
Yeah, me and myself and Irene.
So me... Anyway.
Yeah, so, all right, so we're going to try and do what we've done this before on the Saturday show when we used to do it, which is come up with a few sort of gripping debate questions and discuss them. So I want to start with the elections because, of course, that just happened. And
wait, what?
No, I mean, I don't know about you guys out there, but I loved the CBC election website, like, tracker thing. I was meant to be doing some revision, and I basically sat there for 4 hours and watched the damn thing just go.
You watched the map just turn different shades of... You watched the map just turn different shades of red, is essentially what happened.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was just fantastic. Like, it, literally, I was there when the Atlantic stuff came in, and it just got better. It was pretty... I don't know. I had a lot of fun, because it was what I was hoping was going to happen.
And isn't it amazing that you can be at the place that breaking news is happening, because breaking news these days is so internet focused and so just everywhere.
Yeah, I mean,
the prison.
It's true. If you're really into Twitter and things like that, like news becomes like news stations become irrelevant because you're just like, well, yeah, I read that 2 hours ago. Like, I don't need, you know,
that's like 2 hours ago's news.
Yeah, because they're waiting for the AP, like Associated Press, to actually verify that it's true before they stick it all over. Wait, you know, you've read it whether it's rubbish or not a couple of hours sooner. But anyway, so with the election, my questions for you, sir, are: what's going to change? What is going to change now that Justine is in...
Justine?
Well, yeah, because he's got... I mean, have you heard his French accent? It's pretty slick, man.
The candidates spoke pretty good French. I didn't understand a word of it because I don't speak French, but I was convinced they weren't speaking English, which is good enough, really. I don't know what will change. I mean, the world, I think, will suddenly go, hello? Canada's got some new sort of... face job of sorts, maybe a bit of Botox, maybe a bit of a nose job.
It didn't make me want to, when I look at the Canadian leader now, I don't want to punch him in the face. It's refreshing.
He looks a bit less like a hungry...
Which is rich, coming from Angela Merkel, just saying. But
what will really change, though? I think it's a great question, because that's the fundamental problem with democracy in many ways, is that you never know what's going to change. You exercise your democratic right to elect a new government based on their principles, their platform, what they've said in the debates, what you perceive of them as personal characters, what you perceive of their ideologies as well. But when it comes down to it, my personal belief is that when anyone gets elected into that sort of office, unless they're being re-elected, they actually don't know what they're getting into. And I think most people... not all, but most people do go in there with good intentions and with an idea to work upon their ideology. But I think the reason it often doesn't happen is just because they get into the office and they realize there's about 10,000 more issues than they were ever aware of. And trying to allocate funds to all those relevant issues and trying to allocate resources and time and trying to sort of focus. And then there's always the re-election debate as well. The first term, because, I mean, Canada doesn't have term limits, right?
No.
But in the States, there is. So in the States, your first term, so for George Bush and now Barack Obama... it's all about getting re-elected, really. Like, certainly the last, 2 years of the four in America about getting re-elected. So you can see Obama now. He's not running again. He's done, everything he wants in the last, 4 years. First term was, reasonable. He's got everything he wanted done. In Canada, there's always, I think, that threat of, I might lose it next time.
Mm.
So I wonder...
It didn't stop Harper. He did what the bloody hell he liked, didn't he?
Which is true. To his credit, he was very full throttle, and he did what he wanted to, and it appeased many Conservative voters. But at the same time, it didn't appease enough voters because he lost the election. People were upset enough that they said, you know what, no, you've done what you wanted to, what you needed to, but we think that's fundamentally incorrect. We feel like that you're infringing upon our rights. We don't want you to lead the country anymore. So in that fact, there is going to be change because Stephen Harper's not leading the country anymore. And his full throttle style of Conservative politics is no longer going to be the driving force in Canada.
Well, definitely. I mean, my two thoughts on it is, one, he's going to struggle to begin with the fact that the Senate is currently a Tory majority, because we've had 9 years of electing Tories into it. Because I believe it's similar to Britain, like the House of Lords, where the people in charge, whoever's basically Prime Minister, is picking nominees for any new seats that come up in it, and it's otherwise you're in there forever. So he's going to struggle to pass things through that House that are particularly controversial, though I don't think it's quite like the American sort of congressional gridlock. I think will hopefully be a bit better.
The House of Lords...
The House of Lords is not meant to, but the Senate's different.
Okay,
because the House of Lords is not really meant to have an opinion.
Yeah.
It's meant to just basically stop crazy shit going through.
Yeah.
The House of Representatives, the Senate is meant to be a little bit more objective. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. And I think the second thing is what I hope is, you know, the change that really governments can affect and should be looking to affect, in my opinion, is social issues. Because economics is a tough one in that they should be providing, you know, basic amenities of healthcare and education. But in terms of a lot of other things, they don't have as much effect as we give them credit for when things go well, and when they don't have as much effect as we give them blame for when things go badly. You know, I mean, you can obviously put banking regulations, which they should do, and you know, but in reality, like, they don't, we don't, you know, like, whether Harper, unluckily for him, was prime minister through the market crashes, and you know, that was nothing to do with him. That was, you know, problems with American banking, overselling loans that were fake, and all that nonsense. So, in reality, he shouldn't worry. I don't think he should worry about the economics. It will go up slowly again, as it's now starting to. What he should worry about is, you know, changing our, you know, draconian policies on drug laws that are putting incarcerating
barbarian
people.
Barbarian cultural practices.
Yeah, removing ridiculous racist practices like that, making sure that people are not paying a fortune for pharmaceuticals, which we do in this country. People aren't aware.
And cheese,
yeah.
The
Conservatives were all about fixing the cheese problem. They actually reduced restrictions on imports on cheese, which, as an English cheese eater, was about the one thing I was like, yes, Harper has that right. But anyway, so I got one last thought, and then we're gonna play a song, which is I do wonder about this, which is, you know, if Stephen Harper's wife is gonna continue. I feel like the problem's gonna get worse for her, which is, you know, when she was consoling him with a bit of nice little bit of lovemaking after the loss yesterday, like, how badly is she thinking about Justin Trudeau while it's going on? I have a horrible feeling for him. That's what's happening.
I'm not sure that's a recent development.
Oh dear. All right, so we're going to play another song for you. This is the new album from Fiddler. This is a bit of angsty for you. Hope you enjoy.
Yeah.
Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Your favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
Thank you very much. That was Fountain with Egg Island. Before that, of course, was Fiddler with 40 Ounces on Repeat off their new album 2, which definitely, I don't know, that's a lot of fun, that song, I think, personally. Would it, you enjoyed that one?
I was definitely headbanging to that a little bit. Foot swinging. It was, yeah. Oh, I enjoyed the
shaking your jewelry, were you?
Wouldn't go that far.
Like crown jewelry. Never mind.
Bling, yeah. My things were waggling. My chain was dangling.
Well, it's a reference to, I think it was, they played the Albert Hall, the Beatles, and I think it was John said, well, the people in the cheap seats clap your hands and everyone else just shake your jewellery. All right, so what we're going to do now is we're actually going to play some sketches for you. We've been arguing for the last 20 minutes about what we're going to play. So what we've decided to play for you is something we're both in from a while back, which is our succession of Neil and Carl. Which you may remember, and basically these are the two robbers, and they aren't very good at it. So we're going to play you a couple of sketches in a row now from them, so I hope you enjoy it. This is The Robbery.
Next up tonight is two men planning a robbery.
Look, Neil, how are we going to pull this one off?
Look, Carl, it's dead simple. We drive the van through the shop window and grab as many women's panties as possible.
Right, and then what?
We have a lot of women's panties.
I see, and who are we going to sell them to?
Sell them?
Yeah, well, that's how we usually profit off this stealing, Mark.
Ah, of course, we're going to sell them. Eventually.
Oh, I see, yeah. You want to wait till the heat dies down, don't you, yeah?
Yeah, that's right.
Where are we going to store them, then?
Oh, my house is fine.
Okay, but I don't think that they're all going to fit.
Well, the extra large fits perfectly.
I meant in your apartment.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, you can keep the smalls and the mediums at yours.
But I'm extra large, too.
I used to enjoy a good paddy raid at summer camp. Till Mrs. Jennings caught me stealing her bloomers. They're going to make a great hammock.
Next up tonight, Neil has been caught, and the police want a word.
We caught you, red-handed, Neil. You were holding 200 nipple rings, and you want to tell me that they were for personal use.
I found them, honest.
You were in the shop, wearing a balaclava and holding a bag that said swag.
So? You got nothing, bruv.
Have you ever been in minimum security prison, son? The toilet paper is one ply. One ply! Why don't you just sit there and have a think about that?
You don't scare me, Gov.
Oh, yeah? Well, this is just the icing on a very disgusting cake. You know why you're really here?
Enlighten me.
You know why.
Do I?
Wear the panties, Neil!
I don't know what you're talking about.
We have CCTV of you running with half the Victoria's Secret catalogue under your arm last week in Camden Square.
Got my face, did you?
No. A pair of heavily soiled underwear was obscuring your face. But we managed to match those skid marks to the briefs you're wearing today.
I'd like to see my lawyer, please.
I love the Victoria's Secret annual runway show because I love a woman with wings.
Oh, just make a decision. Mexican or Italian?
I don't know. We had Italian last week.
Well, my first choice was Chinese.
No, it never leaves me satisfied.
How about Greek?
Ew, no way. Gross. Ew, no. Let's do Spanish.
No, I always get stuff stuck in my teeth.
What about North American?
Oh, but it's always so fatty.
Oh, then get Japanese. You can't go wrong with Japanese. It's consistent. It's always satisfying.
Fine. It's settled. Tonight, we get a Japanese hooker.
That is one advantage of being single. You don't have to consider others when buying a prostitute. Next up tonight, Mad Max goes to see a therapist about his anger issues.
Max, please take a seat. You can leave your sawn-off shotgun in the umbrella stand. So, did you do as I asked? Did you try and meet one new person last week?
I said hello to a barista on Sunday.
Good. And how did that go?
I shot her.
Oh, Max, we talked about that.
Sorry. She started talking about BuzzFeed and this white rage boiled up inside me.
Understandable, but you can't go around shooting everyone who irritates you. You're not the United States government. If you want to recover from this acid trip you had at Burning Man that made you think you were racing through the desert for years, you are going to have to try using your words a little more.
But brain not work so good anymore.
I know, Max, and it was really mean of them to make films of you with that anti-Semite, but at least in the remake they got your slight lisp right.
Yeah, but I don't remember saving any supermodels in the desert.
Well, you did do a lot of acid. Have you been doing your breathing exercises?
Yeah, but someone they interrupted me on this morning when I was trying to do them on the bus.
Oh, dear. Did you restart them like I told you?
Yeah, as soon as I shot him.
Oh, Max!
It's fine. He was 82. He was nearly dead anyway.
Max, you are never going to recover if you keep engaging in violence. You need a love interest. That always calms you down in the movies.
Did you want to go out with me?
Maybe if you looked like Tom Hardy.
Damn!
I personally
got served there, didn't he?
So,
yeah.
Multiple choice test.
So what,
Simon,
what do you want to talk
do
about?
Do you spend A, more time shopping for prostitutes, B, more time doing acid, or C, spend more time raiding panty drawers?
I'm a student. I can't afford any of those things. Like, where do you think all this prostitute and panty money's coming from, man? Like, I barely afford dinner.
Because you're spending it all on handies and prostitutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No. So, yeah, there we go. Sorry, I do apologize because I managed to not play the middle clip for the robbery, which would have made that third one make way more sense. So you can blame me for that one. Sorry about that, Connor. No, you
just get out of here.
You're just disappointed in me.
If you can see my eyes, which you can, but no one else can, you'd know. And what do you mean? You do know. You can see my eyes.
Why are you winking at me?
Shh.
All right, it's just got weird. Let's play some music and we'll come back.
Are you so selfish?
All right, there you go. That was Teen Days with Post Storm. Before that was No Aloha with Putters. All right, so I'm in the studio still with Connor. We're gonna play another sketch for you now. This is one Connor wanted to play, and this one actually goes all the way back to episode 3, which was March this year. Frick, it feels like a million years ago now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is our debate on hunting. Which just seems kind of relevant with the discussion on guns that is constantly ongoing forever. So
to understand the premise, you might need to go to Urban Dictionary and type in hunting to get a very accurate kind of picture of what we're describing here.
Is there another definition?
Don't pretend like you don't know, Simon.
I don't think I know what's going on.
Didn't you create Urban Dictionary?
Did I create Urban Dictionary? Not that I remember.
Too much acid.
Yeah, bloody hell. I knew that was going to happen. Anyway, here we go. Here we go. Here's our sketch from a while back.
Next up is a debate that took place in Houston, Texas, on the issue of sport hunting. Is it cruel or just a bit of fun?
Good evening, and welcome to the deliberation room. I'm Olivia Dean, and tonight we are discussing the issue of sport hunting. Is it a pleasant pastime, or is the maiming of animals for sport the behavior of a psychopath? Joining me tonight to talk about this is game hunting expert Larry Dale, fox hunting enthusiast Lord Stilton of Cheshire, England, Green Party candidate Nellie Clearwater, and a half-dead badger. Welcome to you all.
Hello.
Larry, you can start, as you're currently pointing a gun at me threateningly.
Thank you, Olivia. I do find I get my own way with Bessie in my hands.
You call your gun Bessie?
Yep. Named her after my second daughter, who also happens to be my third wife.
So what's your argument for hunting?
I'm a simple man. My argument likewise is so. There ain't nothing more natural than a man killing his dinner. Why should that change?
Well, Larry, we have this thing called industrialization, and now you can just go to the supermarket and get it.
So what? This is way more natural.
Maybe, if you killed it with your bare hands, but there's nothing natural about a shotgun.
It's made of stuff that comes out of the earth. It's made of nature.
I guess, but then everything man-made is natural.
Well, yeah, dummy.
Lord Stilton, you seem to want to say something?
About time. Sorry. Larry, is it?
Yeah.
How quaint. Well, Larry here is quite right. I'm a man of tradition, a member of the upper classes who have ruled Europe long enough that nobody finds it weird. And part of that great tradition is fox hunting. They have tried to ban it, of course, in the UK, but when you own as much land as me, it's easy enough to hide. Fox hunting is a sport of kings, right up there with polo, water polo, and pleb polo. That's where you use a local ruffian as the ball. In fox hunting, it isn't even that common we catch the fox.
But when you do, they get torn to shreds by a pack of dogs.
Well, it's not like I'm going to get my hands dirty. I wasn't born with the name Larry.
Hey.
Sorry, I forgot you had the gun. Calm down, big fella.
Well, we still haven't heard from Mr. Badger. What's your 2 cents? A point well made. How do you counter, Lord Stilton?
Well, he's quite right. I never really thought about it like that, to be honest.
Too far, Mr. Badger. That was just racist.
Apology accepted. It was the heat of the moment.
Miss Clearwater, can you add to Mr. Badger's points?
I will try, but he hit it right on the head. To add to his points, I'd say it's a barbaric and unnecessarily cruel way to kill animals, even if it's for sustenance. In the USA, where we still have capital punishment, death row inmates are granted the most humane way possible to kill them. Why should innocent animals suffer worse than your most sadistic members of society?
Good point. I agree. We're too damn soft on death row inmates. I think I just found myself a new cause. Thank you, Nellie.
That is not what I meant.
Excuse me?
Stop pointing that gun at me! You can't shoot me for that!
Texas has a stand-your-ground law, ma'am.
I don't think that works in this situation.
You'd be surprised.
Well, let's leave it there for today, guys. We're out of time, and Mr. Badger, I believe, is coding. Join us again in the deliberation room.
Thank you, Olivia and the team in Texas there. That item was brought to you in part by Tom's Top Toilet Paper. It's almost too good for your taint.
All right, there you go. That was the fox hunting debate. How did you enjoy that one?
The thing that I like particularly about that sketch is that we've never said so much in so little. The Badger's monologue was perhaps the greatest piece of I think eloquent speech since Churchill.
I think that was my best acting ever, was the doing that piece.
I think it was really a triumph for everyone. I mean, yourself especially. The dialogue, and especially the monologue by Mr. Badger, it was unparalleled. It was so raw, and the way you presented it,
why do you have to be so racist? That's what I don't understand. I mean,
I think that was actually brilliant, because you know what?
Is that maybe the result of his oppression as a minority has made him jaded towards the majority in society?
I think it really talks a lot about a lot of different sort of influences. I think that's definitely one. I think you've hit the nail on the head with one of them. But also, you know, obviously, you know, racism isn't something we embody today, but it does add that extra bit of humanization and personification
to make him a little racist.
You know, they have a flaw, don't they? You know, they become relatable.
I know, but does it have to be that flaw?
Well, but I mean, you don't really need to pick and choose. You're right, because I mean, as you said, like, I mean, by being a minority, you then perhaps lash back, you lash out in retaliation. I mean, obviously, the Badger had been sort of discriminated against.
I think he was also been
orange,
shot that he was a bit
orange-coated
bitter as well.
Beasts and very pink, tall trees.
Pink trees? What are you on about?
Well, legs and arms and...
Oh, you're referring to us as being pink trees.
In the way that the Badger would comprehend.
Ah.
So I really think that is very special. And the you're right. The emotion you put into that was... When we did it, I was really speechless. And even now, looking back, I think that is perhaps the best you've written.
Piss off. All right, this is Mini Mansions. I hope you enjoy.
Overnight. Explore music that spans Eric Satie's Musique d'Ambulement to Lawrence English's dense electronic drones and nomadic streams, Vancouver New Music's 2015 Festival of Ambient Music. Nomadic Streams runs from October 22nd to 24th. For more information, visit newmusic.org.
Well-known pimp, narcotics king, big-time racketeer, back in full force.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is.
Do you need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life? Perhaps a song from a film or a tune from TV? My name is Gap. Exploding Head Movies is here to give you sounds from the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future, and those forgotten classics that need a little rescue. Loading Head Movies, Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Do you like laughing, hilarity, radical thought-provoking creativity, and laughing? UBC Improv is UBC's home for improvisational comedy, theater made up on the spot. Like us on Facebook to learn when our next shows are. Search for us on YouTube for our film sketches. And follow us on Twitter because we want the followers. UBC Improv. Insert cheesy slogan here. Let's get it on.
All right, there we go. So that was Mini Mansions with Death is a Girl, which I'm sure you were all dancing in your beds to, or wherever the weird place to listen to music is on a Wednesday night. So we've not got long left. We've only got a couple of minutes, and then we're meant to leave. They don't like us hanging about. So what are we going to talk about? We've got a few things left. I want to talk about Carl Pilkington, because he's fantastic. For those who don't know, Carl Pilkington is an idiot genius from Britain who, sponsored by Ricky Gervais, has become legendary throughout the world for his travelling adventures. And he's basically the man who goes nowhere who's been sent now everywhere because of that great contrast of his inability to think outside the box and then being shoved outside the box. And so the new season of his latest project, which is The Moaning of Life, which is where he goes around the world looking for the meaning of life in his own strange way. And the new season just started. I watched the first episode last week. It's called Art, and he's looking for the definition of art. So he meets a guy in New York who decorates dog poo. And Carl actually loves that. He thinks it's brilliant. He meets a woman who vomits onto canvases to create art, a man who punches canvases with, like, you know, with gloves covered in paint. He meets, what else does he go for? He gets naked and joins a group who basically all put their bodies together to make an art piece, sort of, you know, whether a lion or a motorbike. Most of it is just him saying, "I'm not taking my clothes off." But it's very good. I know you watched the first season, Connor, so, you know, what can
I
you tell us?
I also have the book version of it, which is for the most part just a lot of it written down, but it's hilarious. I mean, with the backing of the Ricky Gervais enterprise
and Sky, which is, like, you know, big money.
Of course, he has become the one of, if not the, I think, biggest sort of cult heroes and characters of today. He's not in the popular realm as much, but he has a massive international following. He really is amazing in his the way in which he thinks. It's often outside the box, but not even outside. It's outside of, like, a box, like three boxes down the line.
Sometimes he's not that wrong. He is always still wrong inside. Like, I always feel like he's missing something every time. But sometimes, if you don't think too hard, you're like, oh shit, he's right.